Did you know that you can tap into a power greater than yourself as you're going through challenges in life and uncertainty, and you can step into these powerful archetypes in order to become a new version of yourself and tap into hidden skills, hidden traits within yourself that will allow you to move through challenges with success? And you can do this by tapping into goddess archetypes. And it was Carl Jung's research that was first aware of these archetypes that show up in the feminine consciousness in society. And they still exist to this day. And the book Goddess Within expands on this research to really give you an insight into the goddess archetypes that show up most in modern women today. And goddesses will help you to really embody different parts of yourself that are needed to come to the surface and show you what is in the way of you being able to step into your power. And each one has a specific wound. And that's why we need all of the goddesses to become our whole self. Well, I've created a quiz that will help you learn what your goddess archetype is currently, the one that is most alive within you, as well as the complementary goddess archetype that you need in order to move through this next stage of your life. And this can be very personal to you based on the stage of life that you're at. And just know that the goddess you're strongest in is an insight, and you already have her at her strongest power. So it's not about trying to embody these traits more. It just gives you insight into where you are at currently, and the complementary goddess will help you balance out what skills are needed, what traits and ways of being and energy are needed. And this quiz will really invite you into these six goddess archetypes and tapping into their energy. So with your quiz results, you will get a Pinterest inspiration board, which will have rituals, images, and other symbols to evoke her energy and connect to this goddess. And it'll be so interesting for you to learn your goddess and see how this shows up in your life, as well as other goddesses, and when they've showed up in your own life, your friend's life, and the other women that you know. So you can take the quiz at goddesstype.com. This is linked in the show notes, and you'll receive your results with a long write-up about your goddess type, what strengths she has, and what strengths she needs to embody at this next stage. So you can find that at goddesstype.com, linked in the episode description. Let's get back to our episode. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Emily Grace, and I'm very, very excited, as usual, to share with you today's episode. I interview Kate Leeper, and she is a psychotherapist, feminine embodiment coach, integrated somatic trauma practitioner, and grief and pleasure alchemist. As creatress of the Senshu Alchemy School of Embodied Grief and Pleasure and the Senshu Alchemy School podcast, Kate's work is a powerfully embodied, aliveness-oriented approach to grief and loss. Through the lens of the archetypal feminine and with an emphasis on sensual movement, ritual, and creative expression, Kate is devoted to sharing the healing gifts and leadership power of her work to women all over the world. And I met Kate through the School of Embodied Arts, where I got my certification in feminine embodiment coaching, and she was actually who I met with on my graduation call. So it feels very special to chat with her in this way and really dive into the power that grief has and why it's connected to pleasure and how we can use both of these expressions and these emotions to move through our body, to become embodied, to show up fully as ourselves. And I've never actually heard of grief approached in this way. So I think you'll find it really interesting to hear how there's this other spectrum of aliveness that grief is associated with, and how grief is not really related to just one event or one type of loss that we all as women hold loss of identity within us and shame around the, you know, patriarchal conditions that are set up that really block us from showing up fully. And that's the work that Kate is doing in helping you to liberate from that and step into your creative feminine leadership. So you can find Kate at her website, katelieper.com, and she has a link as well to her Sensual Alchemy School podcast, which I will link in the show notes, as well as her Instagram. And she has a beautiful audio offering that she mentions in the episode that will also be linked. So I hope you enjoy this episode. So welcome to the podcast, Kate. It's so lovely to have you here. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you, Emily. It's really beautiful to be here.
Yes, yes. And I'd love for you to share, you know, as we start this conversation, what really brought you to the work that you're doing with grief and feminine embodiment? And I know with this type of work of emotional healing and embodiment, it's normally from our own lived experience and what we've navigated. So I'd love to hear a bit about your story to get us grounded.
Well, I suppose, as with all stories, there's a lot of nuance, there's a lot of twists and turns, and I feel like this work has been the culmination of probably a couple of decades, really, in the making. So feminine embodiment, and I suppose my own incorporation of this modality into the work I was already doing as a psychotherapist about 7 years ago, six, 7 years ago, that has really come about because I was yearning for really a way to be with myself, I think, before anybody else, in a much more loving, compassionate, accepting and grounded way. I had been working as a psychotherapist for a little while in clinical settings. And although I loved the work I was doing with women, I felt like there was a really big piece of the puzzle missing. And this was in regards to women's bodies and the connection to our bodies and the wisdom available there. And I had personally really, I guess, experienced a severing of that, you know, through my 20s, particularly, really this disconnect that I hadn't recognized until really, you know, my early 30s, as I began to have babies and you know, I suppose really see myself mirrored in these little people as well. And so for me, the feminine embodiment piece was this really interesting kind of magnetism to the work in which I just knew, okay, there's something missing here. I am just longing to be in my body. I miss whoever I was, this creative woman, this woman kind of led a little more by her sensuality and curiosity. And once I embarked on those studies, it was just like, you know, it was mind-blowing to me how much it began to really impact my clients as well. And so I've just been a devotee of this this coaching methodology. As I guess, you know, have my own unique integration of skills and learnings. And so there's that piece. And then running alongside of that, my own life took me in some really very challenging places, quite unexpectedly. And so I guess the most defining experience for me was about a 5-year period of immense grief where my sister, my younger sister, my best friend in the world, was diagnosed out of the blue, completely bizarrely, with a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And she was 25 at that stage. And I was 30. I just had my first daughter. And so that really threw all of us in the family into utter turmoil. And that began, as I say, about a 5-year process. So where she firstly had surgery to remove the tumor originally, which was deemed benign at the time. But unfortunately, the surgery impacted her her brain in such a way that she kind of came out of surgery with pretty significant personality change, actually, along with some other cognitive disabilities, which over time there was significant repair, but she was very different, very different person than before the surgery. And then at the beginning of 2019, just as she had started to really find her feet again in life, her and her husband had just begun to maybe explore some IVF options. She was diagnosed again with a second tumor, and this time very fierce, aggressive stage 4 glioblastoma. And so within 4 months, she died. And that entire period of, just absolute trauma and grief really opened me to, and because I had been immersed in the world of feminine embodiment, it really allowed me to experience this period of my life in a very, in an incredible way, with utter depth. And I would say courage compared to maybe how I would have approached it many years before that. But yeah, I think what has crafted my work and my offerings in the world the most is the fact that I learned ways of really being with the pain and the depth of grief, not to bypass it or take it away or fix it, but to actually stay in my body and be able to welcome aliveness and pleasure and joy and possibility and have them coexist simultaneously. And this has been really revolutionary. And I suppose my unique medicine that I can support others as they move through their own grief. So there's a big story for you, Emily.
Yes, thank you so much for sharing that. And it's really helpful to see, your journey to embodiment and first being really in the mental field as a psychotherapist and then being drawn to this work. And I'm so sorry to hear about your sister, and I can't imagine that sense of loss of, moving towards resolution and then suddenly, that trauma of losing her. And my heart goes out to you. And I really liked on your website, which I saw was, you said you can never be grateful for grief, but you can move through it in this way that is alive and honoring. And I really like that because I think it's a lot of toxic positivity or in this space and in the coaching realm and in healing where it's like, be grateful for every trauma and the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And it's like, how can you be grateful for that? Mm-hmm. I really like that distinction, but at the same time, you're talking about grief and pleasure on the same spectrum. Mm-hmm. How do you view that in terms of accessing these states at the same time, like you just mentioned?
Yeah, a great question. And I guess to begin, I really just want to validate the fact that, you know, even considering grief and pleasure to have some kind of relationship can be incredibly confronting and bizarre for some people. They'll be like, what is she on about? And I think it's so important that before I talk about that is really actually redefining what pleasure actually is. And I think that for us, particularly women, we have come to believe that pleasure is something that we do or give to others. It has been painted as something that I guess is like external to us, or it's a performance. We have to look a certain way, act a certain way. It is intrinsically connected to sex and sexuality. And in my experience, particularly through the lens and the philosophy of feminine embodiment, it's not true. They, you know, that it's a pleasure lie. And the beauty of coming into deep relationship to our bodies is that we actually get to unlearn and untangle from these patriarchal, heteronormative ideas of what pleasure is, and really tune into these subtle invitations into pleasure in our own body. And that can be just so empowering, because every body it can experience and define pleasure for themselves, and it can be so simple. And I think we miss it most of the time in our busy lives, full of just being productive and having these goals and being so focused. We miss opportunities to actually be intimate with and commune with all of the pleasure available to us outside of us and within us. So I think it's really, really important, firstly, to say, let's throw out this idea of pleasure that we've really been kind of indoctrinated by, and begin to get curious about what actually allows us to feel good and alive in our own bodies. And, you know, when we can do that, I believe then it's actually quite simple, this notion of grief and pleasure alchemy that I speak about, because pleasure becomes a resource. It becomes a way for us to simply remember and access our own knowing. And, you know, be sourced by that. So we're able to move through the world, be in relationship with others, be in relationship with the environment in ways that is actually nourishing and nurturing. And that then allows us to expand our capacity to hold the grief. And that's what this is about. This is not about, okay, we're going to feel good. You know, we're just going to pop our grief to the side and we're going to go and, you know, go and kind of prance around and pretend that we're great and yay, we're in pleasure. It's actually about how can we support our systems in a way that we can actually be with the intensity and the ebb and the flow of our grief, and actually show up for it. You know, when those waves come and they hit us, we are prepared and we are able to welcome it and let it kind of, you know, move through us, knowing that there's actually more for us. It's not, you know, our grief is not us in entirety. It doesn't have to take us down. We can meet with it. We can honor it, we can hold space for it, because we've also allowed ourselves to be open to and available to feeling good and feeling warm and held and nourished and alive. And yeah, so that's kind of this dance that I talk about. And there's lots of obviously specific ways that we can do that. And yeah, but I hope that that paints a little bit more of a picture for people listening who are like, what?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is so helpful in seeing how both grief and pleasure are really bringing you to this present moment of acknowledging what is alive within you. And mm-hmm. grief is one emotion that can come alive, and pleasure can also just be that presence, that warmth that you're saying, this mm-hmm. aliveness that wants to come through. And I really like that you said the ebbs and flows of grief, because I think some people think, oh, an event happens and then there's grief and then it's like you work through it and then it's like it never goes away, right?
Right.
Like you said, you continually see, oh, okay, this is what wants to come through, and then have the tools to move mm-hmm. through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is it. And I think it's also really important to mention here as well, you know, I shared the story of my sister's illness and death, and that is obviously, that was catastrophic, right? That was like a huge event that was life altering. But my work also really acknowledges the nuanced, complicated grief that, particularly as women, again, because this is kind of, you know, my specialty,
yes.
understanding that from birth, we in this culture, we have lost, you know, and we continue to lose a lot around our identity, our expression. And a lot of the time we don't actually recognize that what we're feeling is grief. And so I'm also here to really work with these deeper layers of grief that bubble up and don't have a name or can't yeah. be easily identified, right?
Yeah.
Because it's linked with shame, it's linked with perfectionism and control and all of these ways that we've learned to compensate for the losses in our lives and growing up. So I just want to make space yes. for that to be acknowledged as well.
That's very helpful. And I know myself, I've experienced that, those like waves of grief where I don't know where it's coming from. And like you said, it sounds like it's just from the feminine collective and how we can't show up fully as ourselves because of these rules of the patriarchal society that mm-hmm. live in our body. And I think it's really helpful to know that that's what's happening, because sometimes people may not know, where is this grief coming from?
Yeah.
And it's, as women, we all hold that as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say that that's probably actually at the heart of this work more than anything. It is kind of liberation reclamation work as well, and where I see lots of amazing therapists and coaches doing incredible trauma work and you know, really offering incredible healing in those realms. I believe that the grief piece is a huge piece that is missing outside of the obvious, you know, those obvious losses of death and divorce and terminal illness or things like that. It's actually, grief weaves its way through our lives in so many ways, and we miss it, and we don't create space for it. We don't kind of honor it as what it is. And because our society likes to pathologize and label and things like that, I have so many women that I work with who have kind of given their state of being a name or a pathology, and they've identified with that for so long. And really, when we come into the body and we begin to question and get curious about what is here, you know, what wants to bubble up and be known, I would say 99% of the time, grief is at the heart, you know, a sense of immense loss. And that may then have manifested into depression or anxiety or, yeah, perfectionistic traits or controlling situations or a sense of helplessness or whatever it is. But really at the heart is grief. And so I'm just, you know, more and more, I'm just like, wow, this is so much more than, and I don't ever want women to think, oh, well, you know, I've never really experienced a major loss, right? Nobody around me has died or whatever. And so, you know, it can't be that, but, it's just so important to know that there is so much wisdom and so much hope, you know, and possibility nestled within the sorrow, the heartbreak, whatever it is that has kind of been held in place for many, many years, and women can access it.
Right. Yeah, it's very helpful to hear that this kind of grief exists, and it's not just the typical loss, but it can be transition and loss of identity and these collective themes. And even in just traditional grief, I find that there's so much stigma around that. So to even, like you said, this flies under the radar because how we can barely handle, you know, actual very obvious grief, but this type of grief is very deep within. And I know that you work with the archetypal feminine, and mm-hmm. I'm curious as to how does that play into this type of healing from grief that's maybe not from an obvious source?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I guess this really links into the feminine embodiment modality. So, you know, my work is informed by somatic psychotherapy and nervous system work, and yet I find it really, I guess part of the reclamation and the liberation that happens is really inviting a reconnection to the feminine. And when I speak to that, which I'm sure that you have spoken to on your podcast at different times, Emily, I'm not speaking to the gendered masculine and feminine. I'm speaking to the energy, the archetypal feminine, those, you know, qualities and traits that we associate with the feminine. But essentially, it is a felt sense. And a lot of the time, you know, this really we're speaking to the ideas of opening channels of receptivity and softness and kind of creative flow and sensuality and intuition and all of these ways of being that essentially in our culture have been deemed less than, you know, for both men and women. So it's, we have been taught to perceive intellectual pursuits as so much more valid and important than really tapping into our intuitive wisdom, right? We've been kind of trained to be competitive rather than collaborative, to be strategic rather than creative, and all of these things. And so when women are really coming into this curious space and feeling into what they sense and experience in their bodies, a lot of the time the archetypal feminine energies have been squashed down for a very long time. So it's part of this healing work and part of this reclaiming work is tapping into what has been sitting on top of it, you know, the need to achieve and these ideas of being successful or having a sense of approval from others or really micromanaging and controlling or, you know, you name it, right?
Right.
And so when we're really inviting the feminine to come forward, we're inviting a softening, and we're really wanting to see what happens when we tune in and allow our hearts to open and expand, when we allow and invite some movement and fluidity as we, as I suppose we let the body lead in a way that it may not have had permission to for a really long time, because we've just kind of headed straight for our executive functioning, and we've answered every question we've ever had with this narrative that's been really embedded in our brains. And so when we drop into the body and we ask, you know, how does the body want to respond? Often there's this incredible unraveling that begins to happen through breath and awareness and movement and sound. And it's really quite incredible to witness. And so the grief and pleasure work is just perfectly complemented by bringing the archetypal feminine back to life and having this energy be at the forefront of the explorations of, the inner landscape. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so beautiful that it really does represent, like you're saying, the emotional side, the creativity and the intuition and those pieces that we've been taught to suppress. And I know for my own journey that grief really did open me up to what I'm doing today. And it really did, you know, force me to reckon with emotions that I had bottled up for so long. You know, grief comes in and there's no ignoring it anymore. And it was almost as if the grief for me was just that doorway to all of the other emotions that I had repressed. And now it was like, okay, now let's deal with it and let's find tools. And I think for me, creativity was a big one. And I wonder now, you know, if I had embodiment tools at that time, how much support I would have felt to let the body lead and let it express. And yeah, because it's like a very bodily experience, would you say?
Yeah, it is, right? It's, you know, it's primordial. Like we are born knowing how to release emotions. I mean, you see babies, if they've lost something, or they, you know, they can't find the breast, or they're they feel alone or frightened. I mean, there's no stopping them. They release, and it's the same way for feeling good. You know, it's a natural human tendency to actually move towards what feels good. And so these ways of being are innately within us. We know how to express them. It's just that where it's taught out of us, you know, because, and this is really, I could speak to this for days, but essentially, to, I guess, be a really productive member of society, particularly, you know, white Western capitalist culture, over culture, it's very inconvenient to actually let grief lead, right? Because if or when we do, it demands time and space.
Yeah.
Like we can't grieve on a schedule.
Right.
And yet the body is so wise and so intelligent that it actually does have, there is this almost like a release valve. So the body will naturally move through waves and cycles of grief until it comes back into some kind of equilibrium. But we don't trust that, because we don't often give ourselves permission to move through it. So like you mentioned before, Emily, most people think, well, if I open those floodgates, I will drown.
Yeah.
And that's actually not true. Our bodies know how to support us through that if we just allow ourselves to move through it. But, and it's not our fault that we don't kind of trust that anymore. And it's not our fault that we don't necessarily know how to move through it. It is that we have been very specifically trained out of it. And So really, I see so much of my job as actually just holding a person and guiding them into a felt sense of safety so they can move through those cycles and free up space to feel good, you know? Yeah. And it really can be as simple as that. It's this relearning of our natural human tendencies and what we already know how to do.
Right. And allowing that process to take place and clearing the blocks in the way to that. And I'm very grateful during my grief journey that a therapist, you know, I work with said to let it come through whenever it wants to. And even if it's inconvenient, make the space for it. And I think it's just a metaphor as well for our emotions and our senses to let them be and express. And I'd love to hear, you know, on the other side of this processing, what's possible. I know that you're supporting women in moving towards creative feminine leadership, and what's possible on the other side of this grief.
It's really beautiful, actually. What I witnessed and what I have experienced in myself is that when women, particularly, I guess, many women who gravitate towards my work, they are creative, empathic, you know, attuned women, and they, a lot of the time, they have a vision for a more beautiful world, you know, but they don't necessarily fit into this kind of masculine structure of leadership. And so what I witness and what I experience in women who have these incredible visions and they have this work that they want to do in the world, when they're able to build this deeply honoring, trusting relationship to the fullness of their felt experience, right? The grief, the pleasure, the sensuality, the expression, all of the things. And when they can, again, expand their nervous system capacity and really understand how and when they are activated and kind of regulate and resource themselves, it allows them to really understand their grief and all of their emotions really as allies, you know, and instead of kind of enemies that are coming in to sabotage them at every turn, it's like, there's actually like fodder here for me to draw from. If I can be with the fullness of who I am, this can then inform my creativity. This can then really, like, a lot of it is blossoming through shame, like just layers and layers of shame. And so when that has been removed, there is a sense of freedom in their expression. All of a sudden, they're writing, speaking, creating in ways that they hadn't ever given themselves permission to or had access to.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they are renegotiating relationships so they are more nourishing and respectful for themselves. They're stepping into a kind of leadership that I feel our world really just craves, which is honest and open and loving and compassionate, but actually deeply embedded in a sturdiness, because they know that, like, their body is on their side, you know, and they're in deep partnership with all of who they are. So it is my favorite work, really, this alchemical exploration that really allows each unique woman to just tap into the essence of who she is and just kind of unleash that without all of the layers of muck that just isn't necessary, you know?
No, it's not. And exactly what you said, like that shame being the main block to this creativity, to being visible, to being seen, and also the nervous system safety. Like if you aren't able to hold space for yourself, it's hard to hold space for others and lead them. And so you're Yeah, I love this. Honoring of self really allows you to lead from this place and be open to receive criticism or feedback and not let it, you know, take you down and be on your own side. And I really like that you said the emotions are on your side. And I think that's what drew me to the School of Embodied Arts was, you know, this reaction that I would have to anger. And I realized, oh, like, I don't like when anger shows up. Why is that? And then I learned the tools to be with anger and to process it. Because like you said, I think women were taught to repress anger or any of these negative emotions and cover that up with shame. And it really blocks us from our own unique voice.
Yeah. Totally. You said it so perfectly. And when we can't access that, it's a damn waste.
Right.
Really. Like, that's what it comes down to. And I just think we're so ready, you know, our society is just so ready for a shift in this kind of direction. And so, you know, it's pretty countercultural work, but but there's, I think if you are somebody who hears it and feels it, you know, it's for you. And that's part of like trusting that embodied yes, right? That yes. Nudge, like, oh, I think that's what I need. Yeah.
Yeah. You will know that as well in listening. And I think this work does call you in that way. And I love that you said too, I want to touch on that, you know, men also want to embody the feminine, the healthy feminine. And I think as women, as we can step into this and lead from that way, it kind of shows them like, okay, there's permission to do it because we've been trying to fit into masculine templates.
Absolutely.
That has not been working, right?
Well, this is it. I mean, it doesn't work for anybody. You know, it really doesn't work for anybody. And I think at any point, if we are, if we don't feel safe and free to show up in the fullness of ourselves and just with this like tiny little box of acceptability and that, yeah, no, men can definitely feel angry. That's fine. But they absolutely can't be, you know, soft and grieving and yet women, you know, and even like the pleasure thing, it's like, it's for everybody to deeply access what brings them joy without feeling inhibited or shameful or like they're, you know, they're weak or they're too masculine, you know, if you're a woman or whatever it might be. I mean, for crying out loud, it's like the slimmest window that we are afforded in this society.
Right.
I mean, that's just so sad. And so, yes, it is. I think we are making very kind of slow incremental steps. And men as well, I see beautiful work out there for men supporting them to really access the depth and fullness of them as well. And it's high time that we all give ourselves permission to just be. And what would await, you know, if we can do that, like in terms of the way we can innovate and the relationships we can build as we face some pretty incredible challenges globally, right, at the moment. So, yeah, it certainly affects everybody.
Absolutely. It's a ripple effect. And I think, like you said, in order to be strong and steady within, I think this is the only path forward, really, is this embodied approach and allowing yourself to be fully expressed. And you're doing such beautiful work through your Senshu Academy and your podcast. And I love for you to share, where can my listener find you online, learn more about you and how to work with you?
Yeah, thank you so much. So you can certainly find me at kateleeper.com. So that's my website home, and you can find the Senshu Alchemy School offerings in there. I also have the Senshu Alchemy School podcast. And, you know, I have amazing conversations with women, and sometimes I'm like musing myself about, you know, what is it to really feel alive and to support us through grief and to really reclaim pleasure and the feminine. So there's lots and lots of good stuff in there. So you can find the podcast on, you know, your fave platforms. And I'm also on Instagram at kate.leeper. And so I'm always kind of sharing different offerings, free classes, experiences, and things like that to get a taste for the work. But there is a beautiful audio download that you can access on my website called Be Held and Behold, which is a really nice way to experience this grief and pleasure alchemy in the body in a very gentle way. It's really just like an extended drop in. It's like a love letter, you know, to your body. And so if anyone's curious, I'd probably send you in that direction first.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I highly recommend doing that. I think with this work, it's really important to experience it, like you said, and get an understanding of what it's like. And you're doing such beautiful work, Kate. Thank you so much. I know grief is such a nuanced topic and a huge emotion to embody and work through. And I really do see it as this portal, like you're saying, to creative feminine leadership and to just showing up fully as ourselves in this world. So thank you so much for what you do and for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Emily. And thank you to you too for your beautiful offerings to the world. It's just, it means so much to come together in conversation around these topics. And I've just really, I've so enjoyed chatting with you today. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you so much, Kate.